Oh, nice. Cool. Right, I'll just get me notes up. And then I'll do a little intro and then we're away. There's something I've been meaning to say. It's been circling my head for days. I feel your love. Hello, so welcome to episode 6 of Like I Am. Today is a little bit different. Normally when I have a guest on, I either know them personally or are aware of like lots of their work. So, but today I don't know much about the guest. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be very interesting kind of getting to know them properly with you all listening. The person we've got on today is by trade a website designer for lots of musicians out there, and at the minute is working hard to kind of raise money for musicians in the UK which might be struggling and stuff like that. So please welcome Ross Barber-Smith. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. That was a nice little intro.
Yeah, all good.
So basically, Like I Am, we literally just chat about music as but pretty much anything and everything to do with music. So the way I like to start is, what was the first album you ever wrote?
Oh, okay. Embarrassing
kind of,
one.
Kind of with your own money, not kind of as a birthday present. It was kind of 100% your choice.
Okay, well, I can tell you the first CD single I bought. Okay. This maybe shows how old I am. it was Gina G. But it wasn't Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit. It was I Belong to You, which I think was her second, probably more inferior single.
Okay.
The first album that I bought, I don't know what the first album that I bought was, but I won a signed copy of the Spice Girls' first album from Nickelodeon.
Nice.
And then my dad sold it at a car boot sale for 50p.
Oh, no. That's not good.
So, yeah. Yeah, I guess I can maybe tell you the kind of albums that then kind of, I guess, cemented my love of music in a more kind of serious, less kind of teen pop kind of way. Would be, I totally got into like the emo kind of stuff in the early 2000s. So it was like Taking Back Sunday, Brand New, Dashboard Confessional. They were like everything to me back then.
Yeah.
And the Spill Canvas as well. Were probably my favorite band for a good number of years.
Yeah. In similar line, my first album was Three Cheers by My Chemical Romance.
Okay.
So that's kind of on the same wavelength.
Yeah, that one brings back a lot of memories for me. Going to college and like blasting that album while I was kind of setting my room up.
Yeah.
My mom was like, "Hey, turn that music down, the neighbor's going to hate you." And I was like, well, I'm just letting them know what to expect because this is going to be their life for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I'd never heard them. And then I remember being in HMV. And you know, they do that two for a tenner.
Yeah.
I had £5. My friend had £5. And I just picked it because of the front cover. Literally just because of the blood and all that stuff.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was kind of why I brought that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's stranger reasons to buy an album in the first place. But I guess that just goes to show album artwork does matter.
It
can influence decisions, especially kind of spur of the moment decisions like that.
Definitely. So what's kind of, if we go before that, you said about the teen pop stuff, what's kind of your first kind of memories of music in general?
Again, it would be Spice Girls probably. Well, no, I mean, I guess before I kind of discovered music myself, I was brought up on a diet of Mariah Carey and Michael Bolton because they're my mom's favorites.
Okay.
And to be honest, I still have a soft spot for both of them today. So they're probably the early memories. I remember going like, because my mom's family are from Edinburgh, so we would drive from Inverness, which is my hometown, down to Edinburgh, and it would always be Mariah Carey or Michael Bolton playing, or Lighthouse Family. That was also in the mix there. So that's what I remember a lot. And then I just remember when Spice Girls came on Top of the Pops, it probably was, again, I'm showing how old I am by all these references. Anyone like younger is not going to know what these things are. But yeah, it was just, I'd never heard anything like it. And I guess because they were young and they were like kind of cool at the time, it was like, it spoke to me and a bunch of my friends, and we all just loved them. And my mum took us to see the Spice Girls in concert, which she was not particularly happy about. But yeah, I mean, those are like the early memories I have. So, I mean, as much as I don't really listen to them now, but I still would credit them with introducing me to music and then kind of finding my own path through all that.
Yeah, I guess when you're younger, especially when you're probably before your teens, I don't think you really get to choose what music you listen to. It's kind of whatever's on, whatever in the 90s, whatever came on Top of the Pops, that's kind of what was in front of you. So you've kind of had no choice. So it was the Spice Girls, maybe Steps, Take That, that kind of stuff was in front of you. Yeah. But I think a lot of people wouldn't admit to that now.
No, probably not. But you know what? I do, because it's all part of, you know, the experience. And I think most of us would be lying if we didn't say that we were kind of introduced to music via that kind of artist. Like, it's the artists that you see on TV or you hear on the radio or whatever, like that's your initial exposure. And I think, you know, you might not be that into it, but it's going to get you, it's going to take you on some kind of path, whether you go further down that road or you realize, no, I don't really like this, so I'm going to find out what else is out there. And then you know, take that kind of exploratory kind of route.
Yeah. Are there any of those bands at all that you still listen to? Because personally, I went to see Take That 2 years ago. Yeah. So I'm still into kind of that. Is there any of those bands at all which you still kind of slip onto your YouTube or Apple Music every now and again?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I probably do now and then for nostalgia purposes, probably more than anything, is that I'll maybe go back and listen to, like, I don't know, maybe I'll listen to like an old Britney Spears album or something, just to kind of hear how it holds up today. I can't really think of any others. I mean, I'm also a big Eurovision fan, which also gets a lot of stick, but I think there's so much great stuff in Eurovision. Like, there's so much great stuff in Eurovision, but don't get me started, because I can literally, that could be end up taking up the whole podcast, which you probably don't want. but I mean, that would also be my, I don't really like to say guilty pleasure, because I don't really think there should be a guilty kind of pleasure when it comes to music. No. But I think some of those songs are like so well written, like they're really well crafted pop songs, because they have to, you know, they have to capture people that don't speak English as a first language, or people that might not be familiar with, you know, different genres. And I think like being able to put a song together that captures millions, like hundreds of millions of people across Europe or across the world, that's a skill. So I don't think that should ever be, you know, downplayed, because it's, it's a big thing.
Yeah. So we'll talk about Eurovision a little bit. We won't go too much, but we'll talk about it a little bit. So I think the last one I watched was when Blue represented.
Okay, 2011. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you straight away?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So obviously, I didn't realize it was that long. It doesn't feel like that long.
Ages ago, yeah.
So obviously, we never win it. What do you think about that? Do you think there's any artists maybe in the last few years do you think probably had a chance, or do you think it's one of them things of that it's not gonna happen because of
I mean weather? I would never say it will never happen, because I think like some of the recent winners, like if you think about, like, so if we take the political kind of argument, you know, everyone hates the UK. Well, I mean, there probably is an element of that, but I don't think people are not voting for the UK because they don't like the UK. I would say Israel is perhaps not a particularly popular country politically, and they won a couple of years ago. So I think it really comes down to the song. And I think, unfortunately, the UK press is very derogatory about Eurovision. And I think a lot of artists won't touch it kind of for that reason. I think they've got the fear of, if I don't win, I'm a failure, which I don't think should be the case at all. So I feel like we kind of just need someone to step up and go, well, do you know what? I've got this.
Yeah.
If I don't do well, I don't do well.
Yeah.
But it's just, someone needs to take that chance, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of the press kind of kick them before they're down.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes maybe it's fair enough, because sometimes, you know, there have been a few very subpar entries. If you think about the UK as a whole, like the UK's music industry is amazing. We've got some of the biggest artists in the world. And then we send people who had a career 20 or 30 years ago, or we send people that no one's heard of. And I think, to be fair, I like the idea of sending a new artist,
okay,
because it can be a huge launching pad for them. But it's just the material has to match up. It has to be authentic to them, which I think has been the problem with some of the new artists that we've sent, is that they've been really talented, but the song that they performed, they either haven't written it or it just doesn't feel like it's the kind of music they would do. And people pick up on that, even subconsciously. I think they pick up on, this isn't quite working.
Yeah.
And this song is similar, but they did it better. So
right,
that's so, my kind of view
so
on it.
So do you think it would be a silly idea for the UK to kind of get, trying to think of the biggest artists, Ed Sheeran or Adele or, don't know, Noel Gallagher, those kind of, it'd be silly to get one of them to do it? Or do you think that could be a way of winning?
I think it would be a credible choice. And right, I think that's kind of the battle, I think, at the moment, is we kind of need to get ourselves to a credible place. So I think that they have to go in to with the right attitude and for the right reasons. I think they have to go in wanting to win, but not feeling entitled to the win. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I think that could be something that opens the door for future. So someone has to take the chance to kind of get us on the right path.
Okay.
That's kind of my thinking.
Yeah. I think every time I've ever watched it with my daddy goes, why doesn't Robbie Williams just do it? He's famous around Europe and we'll win. Do you know what I mean? I think if he was to lose, I don't know, maybe could kick him right down. But
yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, you have to make sure the artist themselves is realistic about the possible result, I think.
Yeah. Cool. When you were into all of that kind of emo stuff, did you learn guitar? Any instruments like that, or did you?
So I went to college to do popular music performance, and I did vocals as my instrument. And that was great because at the time, so many of the other people were into the same kind of stuff. So we did a lot of, it's so long ago now, I can't even remember exactly all the stuff we did, but it was great because I did get to perform like Funeral for a Friend songs and Incubus and all these things. And it was great. Guitar is something I always wanted to learn, but I don't know, my hand-eye coordination, rhythm, they're not my strong points. So, I see a drum kit behind you. I cannot play drums to save my life. I could kind of play keyboard well enough to kind of put chords and melodies together, but that's kind of the extent of it.
Cool. So, did that lead you into playing in bands and stuff, or what did you kind of get out of college?
I played in bands as part of college because part of our course was we'd have to, you know, do like an end of year performance. And then when it came to the degree part, it was like a performance based on your chosen subject. So in my degree year, I did protest songs. So it was like an hour long performance of protest songs. So I had a guitarist and myself. So it was basically acoustic kind of performance we did there. And then for my honors performance, I did the ill-advised, now looking back, option of doing the influence of grunge on popular music, which didn't turn out very well because my band didn't really learn the songs. So you can imagine going on stage for a performance that kind of decides your fate of your grade, and it completely falls apart. That's what happened to me. So I didn't really do any kind of band stuff outside of college. I kind of decided that the performing side wasn't really for me. As much as I loved doing it, there were too many things that I kind of didn't really want to deal with, which was like the rejection and kind of all that kind of stuff, the whole not feeling good enough kind of thing. So that's what kind of led me to what I'm doing now.
Cool. This is a really good segue because let's talk about Electric Kiwi.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're a web designer for strictly musicians, or
I would say primarily musicians. So my ideal scenario would be exclusively musicians and music related businesses, and for, you know, I'd say probably about 80-90% of my clients are in the music industry. There'll be the odd time that I'll do a non-music related project if it's, you know, if it's a client of mine who has a side business, for example, I'll maybe work with them on that. Or if they refer a friend to me, I feel bad saying no because I just feel bad. So I'll take it on if I've got the availability and the time, unless it's something I'm really not interested in, then I'll try and refer it to someone else. But so that all kind of started when, so as I was doing the performing thing, then the final year performance went so badly. At the same time, there was a promotion and marketing aspect of the course as well. And we were pretty much left to our own devices on that. So I'd been doing websites myself since I was like 12, just as a hobby. So for this promotion and marketing class, we were kind of told, do whatever you want. And I was like, okay, I'll do what I want. So I decided to build a site for myself as a singer-songwriter, with the goal being to get 100 people to sign up to my mailing list. And I got a really good grade for that, and I really enjoyed doing it. So I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe this is the kind of thing I could do. I really like doing websites, and I really love music. So why not combine the two and work with musicians? Because being a partial musician, I can understand how musicians think and the kind of questions that they have and the things that they need. And I love doing the design, so combine them. So I graduate and can't get a job because there's just not really many places looking for that specifically. So I ended up doing like kind of a few. So I was working full time and doing an internship and doing some remote work for a company in London on the side, and also trying to do some freelance stuff on the side. Left my full-time job at a call center and then worked for a digital agency who specialized in websites and social media for hotels. So it wasn't really what I was interested in, but it gave me some good experience of working in the agency environment and working with clients. But I was also doing the freelance stuff on the side there, and just kind of got to a point where I was like, you know, I don't really care about this hotel stuff, but I really care about the freelance stuff. And I felt like if I just had more time to dedicate on it, I could make that a full-time thing. So that's kind of what I did. So I guess the first musician client that I worked with, this is where it kind of all comes full circle. So in my degree performance, when I did the protest songs, I did a song by an artist called Tara Naomi, who was like the first kind of YouTube musician. Like, she got signed from YouTube and she did quite a lot of stuff. But one of her songs on her first album was a protest song, and I emailed her and I said, oh, you know, I really wanted to do this song, but I don't have the sheet music or anything. Can you send me the chords? And she sent me the stuff. But then a few years later, she tweeted that she was looking for an intern in LA to help her with some online marketing. So I just tweeted her in a rare, bold moment, saying, hey, you know, I'm exactly who you're looking for, but I'm just in the wrong place, but can we talk anyway? And she messaged me back and said, yeah, let's do it. So I ended up working with her remotely for a while. And then she just introduced me to a few of her friends who needed stuff, and just kind of snowballed from there that I finally had a portfolio of real work for artists. And then it's been, well, like 8 years now or something like that. So it's been pretty constant from then.
Yeah. You normally find that all it takes is that one person, and then bang, you're away. Yeah.
It's the referrals are the biggest thing. Like, I always say, like, and I always post like on Facebook and Twitter, like I'll have these like kind of moments where it just kind of hits me, like how grateful I am to the clients that trust me and recommend me to their friends, because that honestly is the best thing. Like, my favorite projects are the ones that people have introduced me to another friend of theirs.
Yeah. So I didn't want to learn or find out that much about you before we did this, because I think that kind of takes away a lot of the chat. But I scrolled down your Instagram and saw the cover for Tyler Hilton's Indian Summer.
Yeah.
Tyler Hilton is probably my favorite musician in the world.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Okay, I have stories about Tyler.
go for it.
So Tyler was actually one of the guys, I was introduced to him by Tara Naomi, because Tyler was doing his first UK tour. He was supporting Boyce Avenue. Mm-hmm. But he'd never been to the UK, and Glasgow was his first stop. So Tara emailed me and she's like, oh, my friend Tyler is going over to the UK. He doesn't know anyone. Will you take him out for dinner? You know, when he arrives in the UK. And I was like, yeah, okay, fine, we'll do that. And I didn't know who he was, because she'd only really, because I sort of vaguely recognized him. So then I looked him up on Wikipedia and I was like, oh, he's in One Tree Hill and he's been in Walk the Line and various things. So I was like, okay, now I know who this guy is. So we're sitting in the hotel lobby of his hotel, and he comes down and he's like, he's got this really husky voice, and I'm going to do a really bad impression. I'm really sorry, Tyler. I do this every time I tell this story. So he comes into the hotel lobby. He's like, hey, one of you guys, Ross. And I was like, yeah, I'm Ross. He's like, hey, I'm Tyler. And we were like, okay. So we took him out for dinner, and then we were going to a show the next night. And I was sitting in his dressing room because he went out to make a phone call or something. And then the stage manager comes in and obviously doesn't know who Tyler is and thinks I'm Tyler. And he's like, oh, Tyler, you need to come do your sound check. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. No, I'm not Tyler. One, I'm about like a whole foot shorter than Tyler. Two, I can't play guitar, so I'm not getting up on stage and doing this sound check for him. And I was like, I'm not Tyler, I'm not. And then there was the other time when he came over and we literally had to like cloak him to run away from these crazy fans in the street because they spotted him when we were going out for dinner. This other time we had to cloak him and run into this restaurant just to hide from everyone. It's crazy. It's like, he's such a nice guy. I really like Tyler, and we're working on a few things at the moment, actually. So I'll tell him you say hi.
Yeah, I saw him live in 2013, maybe 2012, at the Bodega in Nottingham. And then it's the only artist I've ever seen live that I've actually waited to meet. And then I met him outside, and he was very nice, and he's very funny. I've actually, you probably can't see it, but on that door is actually two signed CDs from him.
Oh, nice.
But he's my idol. I think he is probably top of my bucket list to get on here. So,
well, I can ask a few questions. I'll see what I can do. I like Tyler a lot, and we're working on a few things at the moment. So
cool. So going back to the web design a little bit. So how was it from kind of leaving the call center or the normal job to then suddenly, wow, you're doing what you want to do every day? When you wake up, you're just enjoying what you're doing.
It was definitely a contrast, because certainly, at least with the call center, there were times that I really didn't want to go into work. I really didn't like the way customers would speak to you, and just kind of the long, long days, because it was like I would work 4 days out of seven, but it was the long days, like 12-hour kind of shifts. So the contrast of being able to actually do something that I loved kind of on my own terms and with artists that I loved was, it felt great, but it was a big kind of adjustment, I guess, having to kind of manage my time more carefully and finding the right balance between doing the creative work and also then meeting the new clients and kind of getting my head around all the boring paperwork kind of stuff. There was a lot of learning involved, and the first few months in particular were kind of scary because you have that regular income and then you're kind of like, oh, now all my income is dependent on me actually getting clients and finishing the work and then them paying. And there's been mixed ups and downs along the way with all of that. But I just really enjoyed it because I was speaking to artists all the time. Meeting new artists, finding out what they were interested in and being able to collaborate on projects I actually cared about, which was the biggest thing really for me. It was a weird experience, and I still feel very lucky that I can do what I do every day and not have to kind of rely on the day job anymore.
That's the dream, I guess. That's what I think everyone wants, to wake up happy every day, I think.
Yeah. And I don't take for granted how lucky I am. But at the same time, I know that I've worked hard to kind of get into that position. And it has been a lot of hard work over the years. There's been a lot of late nights. There's been a lot of, 7 day weeks, 12 hour days. Not so many of them now because it kind of, you learn how to kind of structure things and streamline everything. But that took me a long time because I'm not really business minded, so it took a lot of learning to kind of get to that kind of point.
So what other artists have you kind of done work with?
So I collaborated with a friend of mine. We worked for Matthew Knowles, Beyonce's dad. Mm-hmm. We did some work with him and one of the bands that he was looking after. I worked with Shelly Ann, who won All Together Now on BBC. Mm-hmm. I've worked with a Eurovision connection I have is Demir Demirkin. He's a Turkish singer-songwriter. He wrote Turkey's winning song in 2003. I worked with him and his then wife, fiance. I can't remember. They had a band together, so I worked with them, but I've worked with him as a solo artist as well. I work with a studio in New York called Penthouse Recording Studios, and they've recorded so many huge names. I didn't even know who had been there until they kind of sent me over the roster after we'd finished the kind of first initial build of the site. And I was like, okay, I know like all these artists, like they're, that's huge, which is cool. But you know, sometimes my favorite projects are not necessarily the kind of bigger names. It's just all about kind of what the process is like with the person, and also like how much I'm kind of invested in their music individually. Like there's a client of mine called Charlene Clossé. She's a American, she's a like a singer-songwriter, fiddle player, actor. She does everything. She's like a creative force, and she's like the most kind of energetic person I've ever met. But she's also one of the nicest kind of clients that I've had to work with, because even though like she might have a lot that she needs me to do, she always asks what she can do for me. Mm. And then the answer is almost nothing. Just stay awesome. Just stay as you are, and all is good. But she's been amazing, and she's definitely, she's one client. If I get an email from her, I know it's going to put a smile on my face, even if it's going to be like a whole day's worth of stuff to do. There's always something in it that's going to make me smile, and that counts for a lot.
Yeah. Cool. On your, Instagram, I saw that there was a lot of people wearing these t-shirts that you had designed, which is trying to help musicians out there that may be struggling in these times and stuff like that. Just tell us a bit about that and why you wanted to do that and stuff like that.
Yeah, so a few years ago, I think it was 2015, I just put out a tweet that said the musicians you love need you. I can't remember the exact, all of the tweet, but that was the sentiment, was the musicians you love need you. And it got a lot of attention. It got quite a lot of retweets and likes, and I then wrote a blog post about the same kind of thing, just kind of going into more detail. And again, that was well received and well shared. And then I'd been thinking about creating a merch line for a while, but I didn't want it to just be Electric Kiwi logos. I wanted it to be something a bit more universal, I guess, but with a message. So I thought about this probably early in the year, maybe January, February, but then when COVID hit and musicians are struggling more than usual, I kind of felt, well, now is probably the time to put this out there. So I launched the merch range, and I'm giving 50% of the profits to charities. So it's split between Help Musicians UK and Music Cares in the US. And it's been good. I mean, I think also like as much as the idea to launch it during COVID was well-intentioned, the timing's perhaps not great, because obviously everyone's a little strapped for cash at the moment, but people that have bought them like them. I'm very happy with them, and anything as little as I can help, I do want to help by you know, giving that money to the music related charities.
Cool. So what do those charities do with the, this sounds quite rude, but I don't mean it to, what do the charities then do with the money to help musicians?
So my understanding is that that they both kind of do, like they'll have like funding applications, so musicians can like apply for funding, and I think that a lot of the funding comes from either sponsors or donations. So if I can help top up one of those funds that's going to help a musician maybe record their next album or something, even if that's like a really small part that I played, I'd like to play that part where possible.
Cool. So hopefully, where can people pick those up?
Yeah, they're available on my website. So if you go to electrickiwi.co.uk/merch, you'll see the full range. We've got tons of sizes, tons of colors, lots of different variations. And I'm thinking up a few more new ones as well. So there should be some new stuff there within the next couple months or so.
Cool. So let's quickly, one of the last things, talk about Bridge the Atlantic.
Yep.
I saw this on your social things. What's the premise behind that? It's you and a fella from Canada.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so a client of mine, Marcio Novelli, he and I met through Twitter because I bought his album, and then he told me he needed a website, so we just ended up talking from there. And we got to the point where we would Skype pretty much every day, and it'd be sometimes like 2 or 3 hours just talking about everything. So we kind of just thought, well, why don't we start a podcast and we can interview people and, you know, kind of turn what we do a lot of the time anyway into something that other people can learn from. And that's been an experience. So I said, like, I'm in Scotland and he's in Canada. So we thought bridge the Atlantic makes sense. It can be tricky navigating different time zones, especially when you throw a guest in the mix who's maybe from Australia or from LA or wherever, because then it just gets even more complicated. But yeah, I think we've had maybe 250 episodes or so. And that's been going on for a while. We've kind of taken a little bit of a hiatus because various life things have meant that we've needed to take a little bit of a step back, but there are plans to kind of resume things soon. But yeah, it's been fun. We've interviewed a lot of great people. Some of the highlights would probably be Amanda Palmer. Tyler Hilton was our first guest, actually. We had Melora Hardin from The Office. So many. Like, it's been, and actually to think back on it, it's like, I can't believe that we've done all this, because it's crazy trying to juggle so many things all at once. It can be, to think back on it, it's like, wow, did we have time to do all this? And it's like, apparently we did.
Yeah. I'm kind of sat here kind of thinking, if your life was to happen 10 years ago, it pretty much would have been impossible, because there was nothing. There was no social media, no Skype, no Zoom, no nothing.
So. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it definitely would be very different. I don't really know what I'd be doing. I mean, I think I probably would have still come to the conclusion that I want to do what I'm doing. I just don't know how I would have gone about it. I probably would have had to actually move to somewhere like London or New York or LA to actually physically be there where, you know, the majority of the artists and the labels are. But with the internet, the location doesn't matter so much.
No.
Which is great. And I'm glad for that.
Yeah. Cool. So the last one to talk about is, what music are you listening to at the minute? What artists out there would you recommend to everybody?
Ooh, okay. Tough question. What am I listening to at the moment?
Can be old, can be new. Basically, what's on your iPad Nano?
So I'm really, like, there's a Norwegian singer-songwriter that I really love called Maria Mena. She's like, her lyrics are like, they're simple, but they're so real, because she writes a lot about kind of the struggles that she had growing up. I think there was a lot of like abuse and stuff in her childhood. And she writes very bluntly about it, let's say. But she's also got the most gorgeous voice. It's so like soothing. I just love her. I think she's great. And also James Walker, I really enjoy. He's a singer-songwriter from, I think he's English, but he lives in Austria. I know he's got a new album coming out probably around the same time this episode will be released. So I would definitely check him out. He's great. I can't think. I listen to a lot of playlists on Spotify, and then I add the songs that I like most onto my 2020. Well, I do one every year, like 2020 discoveries is this one. And there's so much stuff on there. I can't think of exactly who's on it, but there's some stuff I'm really enjoying on there.
Cool. So you're doing Spotify playlists, which people can check out and hear all the music that you're liking.
Yeah, they can do. Yeah, there's a real mixed bag, let's say. You'd probably think that it's a collaborative playlist between four different people, because genre, some of the stuff does not go together, but it's all good. That's the thing. Like, I like so much different stuff.
There's nothing wrong with a mixed bag. I always say my music taste goes from One Direction to Slipknot and then everything in between.
But I think that's the best way to be. It's like you, and especially if you are a musician as well, you can take inspiration from, you know, all the different things, because you might love something that One Direction do, but you love something else that Slipknot do, and you can kind of combine the two together, maybe not in like quite a hybrid way like that, but you can take bits and pieces from everything. And I think that's how new genres are created, and that's how, you know, you can introduce people to different things. So someone might find you, but then find out that you're influenced by Slipknot, and they maybe have never listened to Slipknot before, but then think, oh, actually, I really like this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Variation is key.
Also, I think musicians are kind of changing the directions so much nowadays that, especially, like, I saw you like Death of Anna.
Oh, I love Death. Yeah. One of my favorites. Yeah.
Death of Anna, if you think about what they were doing 5 years ago to kind of their Sinners album,
yep,
is complete opposite. which...
Yeah, and similar to Slaves and Hands Like Houses, there are two others that I really like as well, that I think have kind of, they've come from this sort of emo, punky kind of genre, and they still have that, but it's a lot more pop now, and some people don't like that, but I really like that. When it's done well, I love that. I think that that's probably my favorite, is when there's like a kind of darker element as well. Like I really like kind of pop that's a bit dark and kind of theatrical, I suppose. Like maybe, yeah. Well, cinematic maybe more than theatrical, but like I like the drama in the pop. And yeah, like anything that's like pop but with like kind of punk and emo influences, I'm pretty much always going to be sold on that.
Yeah, I pretty much with Death of Anna kind of example, if they would have done their Sinners album, I probably would have hated it. But I think because I discovered the 1975, that kind of led way to anyone doing that kind of electric pop kind of thing is good with me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's awesome. So I think we're pretty much there. This kind of, I'll give you a chance to plug anything you want to plug. Go for it. Anything you want to plug.
Cool. Okay. So if you want to check out my work, you'll find me at electrickiwi.co.uk, Twitter, Instagram's all Electric Kiwi, and the podcast is called Bridge the Atlantic. You'll find us on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, anywhere that you want to consume your podcast goodness, that's where we'll be.
Cool. People can check out Like I Am on Instagram. We've just got Twitter back since they suspended it, and then I had to prove who I was, but we got that back. YouTube, any like, reviews, anything like that will help. Every little helps. Thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks very much for having me.
Hopefully you stay well in all the things that are happening up in Scotland or everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, everywhere. Yeah, you too. I mean, we've all got to do our part. So, yeah. Stay safe, yeah, and
cool.
Hopefully we'll all see each other in person sometime soon. It's the dream.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Cool. Cheers.